Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm your host, LaToya Ferguson, and this week we're watching Angel Season 3, Episode 4, Carpe Noctem. And joining me as co-host is writer and one of my Empire Diaries co-hosts, Morgan Ludich. Carpe Noctem was written by Scott Murphy and directed by James A. Cotner. It aired on the WB on October 15th, 2001. This is the episode where Angel accidentally does a body swap with Ron Howard's dad. Carpe Noctem. Morgan, are you ready to talk Carpe Noctem?
I am ready to seize the night.
Oh, seize the night. Ooh. Morgan, for any people who listen to the Empire Diaries or don't listen to the Empire Diaries, I knew I needed to have Morgan on this episode as it is one of the horniest episodes of Angel.
Happy to be here to discuss this very, very bananas horny episode.
It is. I have things I didn't know I wanted to talk about, but now I have to talk about. But before we get into your Angel origin story, I just need to note that the official WB promos for this episode, so, you know, of course, WB had like official promos for everything. And they also had like subtitles, which is what they would nickname things. And sometimes those like nicknames would show up like in the promos themselves. So the subtitles for the two promos they had for this episode were Carpe Softem and Carpe Hardem. Yes, they were two dick jokes is what they were.
Woof. Wow, they knew what episode they were promoting.
They knew 100% what they were promoting. And with that, Morgan, what is your Angel origin story?
So my Angel origin story is that when I was like 15, the summer after my freshman year of high school, I watched all of the B Word show and I fell head over heels in love with it. It was very, very important to me. And then I decided to watch Angel, who I had found incredibly dreamy. I was like obsessed, in love with him.
Of course.
And I was like, can't wait to watch his show. And since it was not all about him sitting around in a room pining for the B word, at least not after season one, it wasn't really about that anymore. I was kind of like, what's he doing? Like, doesn't he remember the B word exists? Like, and also I just kind of kept wanting the show to be exactly the B word. As a 15-year-old girl, I was like, remember when this show was about I liked the show that was about a teenage girl, and this one's about an old man who's sad all the time?
Oh, now that's like your preferred genre, old man who's sad all the time.
Yeah, I've since come around. Now I'm like, give me that sad old man. But, you know, that's the choice of a woman. And at the time, I was merely a girl. So I am actually now in I've been wanting to rewatch Angel and reassess. So I have started a series rewatch with my boyfriend, Michael Chasen, and we are cooking through season one right now because our friend LaToya is hosting this cool Angel podcast and we wanted to be able to listen. So I am now cooking back through season one, which I'm really enjoying now that I'm not comparing it to anything else. But my season two knowledge is non-existent. Every episode, I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of remember that, like when I watch it. So I watched all of three up until now for this recording, and I have watched like half of one. So you might notice a big old blank spot in my memory.
I don't think I'm going to reference too much of your blank spot, so don't worry. What an episode. This is... Well, first, the previously. So did you watch this on Hulu?
I watched this on Hulu, so there were no previously.
Yes. I've decided I need to at least check out what the previously situation is on my DVDs first before doing Hulu, just because I need to know. So our previouslys focus on Fred's hero worship of Angel, the Gavin Park, Lila Morgan dynamic, and of course, you know, Lila pissing Angel off by the Cordelia play. So that's what you need to know for this episode. That's literally it.
That's great. That's good. I know all that.
You're good. See? You're good.
You're so sweet to me on this podcast.
Yeah. On Empire Diaries, I'm not nice to you at all.
I'm loving this. Let's stay on this forever.
We'll see how long it gets until I just start bullying you.
Enjoy it while less.
Yeah, exactly. So we open in the lobby of the Hyperion. Everyone's chilling. And then Fred shows up. And then... So there's many times in this episode where I like go full crazy ex-girlfriend and ask, what man did this? Because like this episode is clearly written by a man.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fred's years in a cave starving line about the fashion models.
Why do girls want to look like that? I spent years in a cave starving. What's their excuse?
Yeah. Very weird. And also just like, it's always weird thinking about writers writing to actors about their own bodies. I'm always like, is everyone comfortable in this situation? Because like Amy Acker is obviously like, she is a skinny gal. So saying that line, I hope she was okay with that.
Yeah, that was my exact note, because I'm just like, are we supposed to be saying that Fred is emaciated? Because this is just Amy Acker's body. And this is very odd. And this is how we're starting.
Yep, just opening right with a bang. I do want to note that while what everyone is doing, that Gunn is playing Game Boy. I was so about that.
I believe he's playing a Game Boy Color, so, you know. He's a man of the new millennium, you know.
I can relate. Around this year, that is also what I was doing constantly. I doubt he's playing a Mary-Kate and Ashley Mysteries Game Boy game, but whatever.
I mean, I guess he's probably like playing Legend of Zelda or something like that. And as we know, Zelda is the boy. But Wes is also reading a book because he's Wes. Mm-hmm. And basically Cordelia, annoyed by Fred, which is understandable. Love you, Fred. But, you know what she's doing. She's just like, Angel's upstairs. And this is where Fred goes on about how Angel, you know, is so deep and so thoughtful. Girl, I love you. But
honey.
Enter old man Angel, rearing his ugly head, and by ugly, I mean beautiful head.
So beautiful.
Old man Angel, who has been reading the newspaper. He reads the newspaper a lot in this episode. And he is so excited for the Charlton Heston double feature at the New Art.
Oh, the old man energy is so strong.
Soylent Green, Omega Man, you can't get better than that.
I feel like you can.
Not to Angel. And none of them give a shit.
And I love how much he's like, I can't believe I'm the fun one now to everybody. Jesus.
He gives them all crap for being homebodies now, which, you know what? He's right. He has a point. They're not doing anything. They're not going out. Let's say it's a Friday night and this is what they're doing.
But Fred, of course, is, you know, such a willing participant in all of this. All of my notes are just like, Fred's cute, Fred's cute, Fred's cute, because Amy Acker is just so dang delightful.
I thought you were going to say dang cute, and then you didn't say dang cute.
See, I shocked you there. But yeah, I just, she is so cute in this scene, and Angel is such a dumb idiot. Read the room, buddy.
He can't read the room. He's Angel. I think about the line, how the worm has turned from Angel often.
Am I the worm?
We're getting Morgan impressions on this podcast. Yes.
It's early, and I'm throwing them in. She's so, so cute. Did her time in Pylea make her forget expressions?
Maybe she never heard that. Maybe she never heard that one.
Fair enough.
This episode was the first time I had ever heard it in my youth, so.
Fair enough.
And then cut to a scene that has never not disgusted me, and it's not for, like, the flesh thing that happens at the end. It is for all the dialogue. It is for the fact that this dude's nips could cut through diamonds.
They call him Stud. Can we take a breather, Stud? Yikes.
I don't like it. I had to just look it up. This actor, his name is Paul Logan. And I just needed to read the first sentence of his IMDb profile for you.
Wonderful. Can't wait.
Paul Logan, an accomplished martial artist, stuntman, and actor, may be one of the hidden jewels in the treasury of action cinema to not hit superstar status.
Oh, wow. So that's very interesting. He wrote that himself. I'm going to take a wild stab and guess that. And he's like, look, obviously I'm not as famous as I want to be, but the people who know me know it's pretty crazy I'm not famous.
It's a choice for sure in terms of a bio. So let's get back to the dialogue in this scene.
Oh, please.
When he says, so ready for round four, I'm very upset because I don't believe that this dude whose body it is can fuck, but I also don't believe that Rance Howard can fuck.
Fair. But also round four, whew, the chafing at that point, jeez. We gotta go there. It's this episode. It's quite horny.
It is so horny, but it also... So later we learn that these are our sex workers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's an interesting choice that they like did that, because the whole point is that he's getting into these bodies and he's like, I'm so young and hot, people just want me. And then he ended up having to actually pay for sex. But then you realize that his approach to picking up women is very bad. And that makes
quite
sense then.
Quite bad, yeah.
It's a numbers game.
Oh, God. Yeah, he's quite bad at it. I felt bad for these poor ladies, especially because of what they witness at the end.
I feel bad for what they witness, and then I feel bad later when they decide we should shame them for their existence.
Yeah, some not kind jokes to sex workers in general. A lot of usage of the word hooker and Cordelia's pretty skanky woman zinger.
Again, I'm just like, what man did this? Is my reaction. I'm like, why is this happening?
But also, Cordy, to jump ahead, Cordy does walk into the room, like, so excited to unload that zinger.
She is so proud of herself for that, and no one heard it. And she's like, damn it.
She came up with that in the car. She's like, I walk in the doors. That's it. Everybody's laughing. Gunn's laughing. Wes is laughing. Fred's rolling around on the ground. I'm killing it. And instead, crickets. We've all been there.
I want to hear Cordelia's tight five. Anyway, then this guy starts to feel weird and he does some Latin and his flesh just is on the floor.
He melts. And it is so funny. It's such a rubbery effect. It's as if suddenly all of his insides disappear and his skin turns into rubber and it just slowly like falls. And I loved it. I laughed at it hysterically.
With the special effects in this episode, I get the feeling they didn't know what it should look like. And then there's like more reds, more lights.
Yes, there are a lot of like bright colored lights. And oh, the way they switch where they just kind of like puke light at each other, I also love. It all makes me very happy. I, again, dipping my toe back into this pond, I am so comforted by the like B-word and Angel level like fight choreography and special effects. It does feel like coming home to me.
So does that theme song, doesn't it?
That theme song slaps. Watching it through with my new first time viewer boyfriend Michael, he goes absolutely ham every time he hears that theme song. He's like, this rules, this is the best. There's a lot of head banging in this household during the Darling Violetta theme.
Awesome. And then we go to a scene where I relate to Fred again, which is when she's telling Wesley about her date, not date with Angel. I'm just like, girl, he doesn't want you, but I get it.
Oh, she is so sweet in this. I like cannot believe how adorable she is. Like all of her miming him, like letting her share the popcorn is maybe the cutest thing I've ever seen. I need a gif of that stat.
And I love that she's like, he's sharing the popcorn. Like, girl, it's just for you. It's not for him.
Uh-huh. He doesn't eat.
Although when he does eat later in the episode, it is the funniest thing I've ever seen.
It is great, and Cordelia's horror at it is wonderful.
He is eating that entire scene. It's hilarious.
It's good shit.
But yeah, so this is happening. Wesley is just like, this poor guy has to listen to this story.
Yes, he is not abused, not into it.
But meanwhile, I guess Cordy has been overhearing this. So she goes to Angel, who's reading the newspaper again because he's an old man. And she's like, you need to talk to Fred. My point about Wesley was actually going to be that unless it's not like the first few episodes of the season where like he probably would have just been very rude to her. And I'd be like, why are you doing this? He's actually being very sweet. But...
Yeah, he does seem like he does have that, like, there's that joke where she's like, there's none of that awkward silence, you know, and then there is, you know, very uncomfortable silence. And Wesley goes, I wouldn't know. That's never happened to me. And I'm like, poor imagining Wes like dating is such a painful thing to think about.
Even Rogue Demon Hunter Wesley, I wouldn't want to date.
Mm-mm. Yeah. In my season one rewatch, Wesley has just come into the picture and I am laughing hysterically every scene that he's in, but he's not his season three, like self-assured, more self-assured self.
Yeah, for sure. The contrast when you're watching season three to season one.
Unreal. How far we've come.
That's character development, baby.
Yeah.
Basically, Cordy is telling Angel about how Fred's been talking about their date. He's like, it wasn't a date. Well, you know, Fred thinks that. Angel calls her enthusiastic.
Like, Angel's, he's lived a lot of life. How do you not, like, I mean, he's oblivious because he's an old man vampire who only wants to spend time alone in a dark room, sometimes with Cordelia Chase. But, like, how do you not know?
He's very emotionally stunted, and his relationship with Buffy didn't actually change that, because a lot of it was just, like, not telling her his feelings and then going away for, you know, weeks at a time. The amount of months or weeks they actually were in a relationship, like, they defined the relationship and were boyfriend-girlfriend, not a lot.
Yeah, and I just want to let him know, like, I mean, I don't consider myself a relationship expert, but I would stop having serious conversations in sewers. And that was a big note of mine for the Buffy and the B word and Angel relationship, if I may.
I mean, yeah, it's where they felt comfortable. And you know what? That was not good.
Not a good sign.
But yeah, Cordy points out that Fred's got the big puppy love. I mean, who wouldn't? You're handsome and brave and heroic. And you know what? Angel loves it. Angel's like beaming at Cordy saying this. And then she continues. Emotionally stunted, erratic, prone to turning evil, and let's face it, a eunuch.
He, again, a man wrote this because Angel is instantly like, a eunuch? No? Who? Me? Absolutely not. Like, he is so angry at having his masculinity threatened in any way.
Well, it's also not, because this is in your blank spot, so it's not even the first time he's been called a eunuch and been like, I'm not a eunuch. That was in season two's Guys Will Be Guys when Wesley was posing as Angel, and the guy who hired Angel did it because he thought he was a eunuch and wouldn't, you know, sleep with his daughter.
Cool.
The patriarchy.
The patriarchy! Ah, the patriarchy. Lovely to have it back. Ever present.
And of course, Cordy says calling him a eunuch is just a figure of speech, to which he says, find a better one.
Fair enough. It is inaccurate, so.
But yeah, his smile when Cordy's giving him compliments, he's like, oh, you think that about me? And then he just turns. This is a great episode for Boreanaz, I gotta say.
He is so funny in this episode. He is having such a great time. You can just see it. Like, I mean, and it always seems like whenever he gets to play kind of more of a variation on Angel or like not Angel or Angelus or what have you, he is always like so excited and you can feel it. And it like gives the show like a burst of energy. And it is very present here. He's having a good time.
He really is like the driving force of this episode that makes it like less like it's still an uncomfortable episode to watch, but like less so because of what he's doing.
Yeah, because I think he does, like, he plays this man as, like, very pathetic. Like, I there's a version of this where he's, like, so cool, and he's fucking all the ladies, but instead he is, like, gross, and because he looks like David Boreanaz, sometimes his grossness is easier to ignore than others. But, like, I appreciate, like, a worse show would just be, like, isn't it cool that he's fucking, and at least we don't have that.
Ew.
I know.
Cordy tells Angel he needs to nip it in the bud, basically, with Fred. And in true Angel fashion, he wants Cordelia to do the talk. Angel, you can't just get Cordelia to do all, like, the things you need to do.
How old is Angel right now, canonically, would you say?
250 or something? 250 and some change?
250 years old, and he's scared of a girl who's like 90 pounds soaking wet. Like, you goof. Fred is, I can't think of a person less intimidating than Fred. Like, she is the sweetest little gumdrop. How could you be scared of a conversation with her?
Well, you know what he's not scared of? Talking about what's happening in the paper, which is actually something they should talk about. The guy's name is Woodrow, a.k.a. Woody, our friend from the beginning.
Hard nips himself.
Carpe hardem. And then Cordelia points out something very important, which is that they haven't been hired for this. And then I, like, double-check. They haven't actually done a paid case all season yet. She's right. They need money.
Yeah. Especially with Wolfram and Hart gunning for them. It could help to have some legitimate business.
But Angel says, no, we're not going to deal with that because that means I have to deal with Fred. So we're going to focus on this new case now. Fred is, of course, just like in awe because that's the hero she knows. So he's, again, making it worse.
Oh, I know. It's like, stop being so handsome and honorable, bro.
Now, at Wolfman Hart, you got a Gavin and Lila scene. Gavin is still being Gavin. He tells Lila, you're a tough one. I know I'm going to have to earn your respect. But give me a little time. You'll see I'm a creative guy. What a dork.
Yeah, an absolute dork. A very annoying, patronizing male coworker. It almost, like, humanizes Lila a little to me to have her have to deal with a guy at work who treats her like this.
It's like, which evil person am I going to root for? Well, not Gavin, that's for sure. And then as soon as he leaves, she's like, we got to get the forger to fix this.
Yes. Like, especially Lila's like, LOL, you're coming at him with paperwork, he's gonna murder you. Like, you should not try to handle Angel this way. And he is not listening.
Yeah, he said, she says he just might rip out your throat. And then Gavin thinks, do you think he'd do something so cliched? I'm like, yes, that's Angel. At least he would say he would do that. Like, you don't know Angel at all. You dweeb.
But he's very confident that he knows more than this woman, at least.
Of course. She's a woman.
Maybe if it was cooking or doing your hair, he'd listen to her. He'd defer to her on that.
Honestly, he's not saying all that, but you know he's thinking it. So this is where Angel Investigations realize there have been three victims, and they've all died at hotel suites, and they've all been physically fit to the point of terrifying me. And Cordy realizes they were all members of the same gym. Mm-hmm. And then we see our beautiful team, a well-oiled machine. They all know what they have to do. They all go to work, and poor Fred has to stay behind. And again, I feel for Fred because that's me.
The quarantine vibes are strong.
So
Fred
strong.
Is safer at home.
Safer at home. Then we go to this brightly lit gym.
Cordelia is so horny in the scene, and bless her for it. I love it.
At least she's trying. At least she's trying. Angel talks to the gym manager, who immediately tries to sell him on a 6-month trial membership for $350.
There's nothing that makes me happier than, like, seeing vampires or magical creatures of any kind interact with, like, very mundane things about human life, like being, like, bullied into getting a gym membership. And just watching Angel go through that and just be confused and at sea with that makes me very happy. I love one old man, and it is Angel.
But yeah, Angel is talking to the guy about the case, and Angel suggests this is the result of the gym condoning steroid use, so that immediately gets the guy to let him see his records, because, like, no. Mm-hmm. And then there's actually the point where Cordelia brings up, like, anything green and scaly, So both of them are kind of thinking this is a go fish situation at first.
Right. Because
it is a similar flesh situation.
Go fish. Beautiful.
Good times.
This is also where Angel brings up Tybo, correct?
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
No, I don't see anything that connects the three of them. Except they were all in the evening Pilates class together.
Pilates, is that like Tybo?
Yeah, if you're living in 1999.
Thinking about Angel doing Tybo is good to me. Thinking about Angel watching a Tybo tape and doing it at home, like during B-Word in the mansion, is very good to me.
In the premiere, I like questioned where Angel's fighting influence came from. But if it all came from Tybo.
Makes sense.
It makes sense. And that's canon now, actually. Angel loves Tybo.
I'm trying to think of timing-wise. I'm like, did Xander tell him about Tybo?
Either he would have heard about it in Sunnydale and just not acknowledged it. Or he heard about it as soon as he got to Hollywood, actually.
Oh, yes.
Doyle taught him about Tybo.
Oh, thinking about them doing Tybo together. Oh, simpler times.
Yeah. So Angel checks out the Pilates / Tybo class. And that's when he sees some shifty looking from the retirement home across the street. Mm-hmm. So he tells Cordy he's going to go check out the retirement home. She's busy, flirting with men.
She says, there could be follow-up questions, so I'll need some phone numbers.
And Angel's like, come pick me up after your work. The way he just pats her on the shoulders, and she had to be like, he's just someone I work with.
Yes, he is very kind of possessive in this scene, and it is very cute. He is trying to be protective, and he clearly does not like her hitting on all these hunks. But look, dude, you're not making a move.
True, and this is why they really should have noticed something was very wrong with Angel much sooner. Compare and contrast, you guys. Come on. Angel goes to the retirement home, and he goes to a room for Mr. Marcus Roscoe, played by Rance Howard, who is the late father of director, actor Ron Howard.
He is so great in this. He is wonderful and is so sweet.
I don't know. I actually don't love his performance.
Okay.
And I will get more into this. But I remember watching this episode for the first time and being like, wow, that old man looks a lot like Ron Howard. And then realizing... That's because it's his dad.
I think he has a sweetness to him that I really enjoy. When he is playing Angel, I enjoy
it. I mean, here's my issue with it, and it's a similar thing I have with the Smallville episode Transference, which is another body swap episode. Mm-hmm. It's between Clark and John Glover's Lionel Luther, mm-hmm. which I think Tom Welling does a very good job playing Lionel Luther. I feel like John Glover there, who's a terrific actor, plays, as much as I think Clark is an idiot on Smallville, he plays him like a lost four-year-old. And I mean, that might be insulting the character, and because, Clark Kent is kind of lame on Smallville often, but it's not recognizable to me as Clark Kent, And mm-hmm. here, I just don't think what Rance is doing is recognizable to me as Angel. I can only kind of tell with certain lines, but mm-hmm. I feel like the performance not so much. And I think part of it is also not playing up as much Angel having to deal with humanity as an old person who's actually dealing mm-hmm. with this, being an old person.
Yeah. With all of the difficulties, ailments, aches and pains that come along with not just being not a vampire anymore, but being older. And I don't disagree that I think there's maybe it's not a very angel-y performance, but I did find it to be kind of a winning one. And for a guest actor showing up and playing on the show, it definitely felt up to par for me. But I get what you mean. It's by no means an impression.
Yeah, buy that he's someone else in this man's body. I just don't buy that he's Angel in this man's body.
That's super fair.
Yeah. And I mean, he's a guest actor coming in and having to do an impression of the star of the show who has specific cadences and everything. You can't really replicate that too. So I'm it would have been really hard. It's a difference between if it's someone who's an established actor on the show, body swapping with Angel, mm-hmm. and then having a guest actor,
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like, I guess I wonder what the process was like, because I know, like, to talk about other, like, Joss shows, to me, one of the best, like, a character performing another character on a show thing is when, on Dollhouse, when, like, Victor, like, gets uploaded with Topher's personality, and, yeah. and Verjokai's impression of, like, Fran Kranz's performance as Topher is, like, note perfect.
Yeah, it's scary, actually.
Yeah, and they were like, yeah, I watched him do the, like, do the lines as he would have done them, and, like, did the impression as, like, accurately as I could. So I wonder if there was a lot of, like, time for them to work together on what the performance would look like. But I don't know. Old man Angel's sweet. I was worried about him.
Aw.
I've seen this episode. I know that he's fine, but I was really, I kept being like, God, he's having trouble.
You're like, I know Angel last passed this episode, but oh, I really do like Rantower's performance, like, in this initial scene as Marcus, because like, he keeps being, like, caught by Angel, like, in a lie, and he just keeps on going. But yep. The thing is, Angel underestimates him for, like, a different kind of version of ageism, because obviously we know Angel is older than this man. But that's, like, not how it comes across. So yeah. It's like, you're underestimating this old man when you also are an old man. It's interesting.
Yeah, spy versus spy, but with two very old men. I do love his binoculars, and I love Angel being like, so all that magic shit in the corner, is that, are we going to talk about that? And he's like, oh, I have old stuff.
A cult. What does he think that Marcus is trying to do to him? Because he doesn't think it's going to work.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to think that, like, maybe as a vampire, he'll be immune to whatever he's been doing to humans, but Angel, like, you understand magic. Like, it is very silly of him to completely discount this man.
Right, yeah. And here we go.
Oh, my.
Cordy picks up Angel from the retirement home. You guys can hear my air quotes, I'm sure.
Yeah. And he is looking disrespectfully.
And poor Cordy, she did get grifted into a 2-month trial membership.
But I hope she got, like, at least 4 phone numbers out of that.
I don't think she did.
Oh, Cordy, no.
I think Angel actually ruined it for her.
I want for her to get dicked down. just because. Only because it seems like it's what she wants, so.
But she does not clock the weirdness of Angel. She knows something, like, something's off with him, but she doesn't clock. Clearly body swapped. And he's like, you and me going back to the hotel.
I love it so, so much. And she says, are you all right? And he says, honey, I've never been better.
Like, Cordy, what do you think is happening?
The idea that Angel would ever call her honey. How alarm bells should be going off now.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top 3 all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX. There's so many ways to watch movies these days. Your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in two visits. So if you're planning to see two movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your three-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So they get to the hotel. He thinks it's an operating hotel, trying to get service. And then he sees the business cards and realizes that it's their base of operation. Mm-hmm. And then he uses his one line, which is, have I ever told you you're a very beautiful woman?
This is, I'd say, a terrible line.
It is. It's a numbers game, too. She laughs at him, basically, and reminds me he has to have to talk with Fred. And then we start with the gay panic of this episode, which, what?
So much.
I think I actually blanked this part out. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is a lot of gay panic. I mean, and I guess like this guy does not know all of these people. I understand the mistake that Fred would be like a man's name, but there is so much like, ooh, gross.
I mean, he starts out with like, I like looking at the women, not the men.
Yeah, he, and is this when he looks down at himself and he's like, wait, am I? Oh, of course I am.
Yeah, that's it. That's the moment.
Is this because of leather pants? Is this because of being well-groomed?
He's not even wearing the leather pants in this scene. He chooses to wear the leather pants later.
Yeah, this guy has some issues he needs to work out.
I mean, he is a trashed man. Like, that is true.
But, you know, it's never too late to try to educate. And this guy, he's got problems.
He does. Back at the retirement home, Marcus, which is actually Angel, wakes up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's where I wrote in my notes, you know, there's something that Angel actually having to experience what an actual human old age is, you know. And he calls the hotel and... body swapped Angel picks up the phone after going, he's like ransacking Wes's office, by the way.
Yes, he really makes a mess, which I don't know, how does he not understand that will have consequences?
He's dumb.
He is dumb. I know I keep asking questions where the answer is he's dumb, but.
Yeah, it's part of the reason he goes into like these like, kind of meathead bodies because like he was a meathead when he was younger, because that explains a lot.
It does seem like a chasing old youth thing, because there's this whole thematic thing in this episode. I mean, it being named like Carpe Noctem sees the night, about the idea that Angel is not like living up to his potential as a immortal hunk, like the idea that he has all of these things that he is not using, you know, to take the most out of life. And yeah, I would argue that Angel's maybe not great at cutting loose and having fun, but it's interesting. Like, this guy seems to very much resent Angel and all of these men whose bodies he takes and destroys for, you know, having something he wants and that he thinks he, you know, will use better.
That's a thing that really tracks, I think, in this episode. Like, his resentment towards the young, which I think that's good. I mean, this whole episode's kind of, like, messy for the many reasons we've said. But, like, there is technically a good story in there about, like, the chasing youth.
Yeah, but I will say it doesn't feel like the Angel side of it tracks as well. Like, I don't – it seems like this guy is – like, this this kind of like cosmic lesson is being brought to Angel about like, you like, if you don't use it, maybe you'll lose it and someone will take it from you. And I mean, it doesn't seem like Angel has like suddenly is back in his body with a newfound appreciation for it. He's just like, all right, back to the grind, because God forbid he have a little fun.
Well, you know what happens when Angel has fun.
He loses his soul and then he becomes really fun.
Angel as Marcus is like trying to call for help, but Marcus Angel is like, hey, sorry about that. When David Boreanaz spells woman.
What a dirtbag.
Truly a dirtbag.
Like, and I know you do not like me to bring up Vanderpump Rules, but I will say Mark Angel, as I've been calling him in my notes, has strong Jax Taylor energy. He is a gross man. Stay away from Cordelia and also stay away from everyone. Isolate yourself.
Quarantine.
Mark Angel says to sweet old man Angel, you don't have to worry about anything except eating some nice soft foods and staying out of Ryan's way. Marcus has a good plan. Like, he has a system in place. Mm-hmm. And like, these poor Marks who are always trapped in his body for this period of time just don't stand a chance.
So Cordelia still doesn't realize something's wrong with Angel, even though he has fallen asleep in the ransacked office. And she told him, why didn't you go to your room?
This joke is so funny to me that it did not occur to him he'd have a room here. It really, which makes me feel a little bad for Marcus, like going back, like if your theory is correct and he was like a young meathead and then eventually aged out of it and maybe people stopped, you know, treating him so kindly because, you know, he wasn't a hunk anymore. Like, how do you get smart that late in life? And maybe it's tough. He's just trying to cling to those glory days, to that himbo privilege.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't believe we haven't called him a himbo yet, because that's 100% what it was.
He needed to check his himbo privilege, and it was too late for him.
He used his himbo privilege for evil, it seems. Like, he was not one of the good himbos.
Yeah, which almost makes, I almost feel bad calling him a himbo, because I'm like, himbos are
lovely. He's just a fuckboy is what he is.
That is for absolute sure. Yes.
Yeah. And then she reminds him, gotta talk to Fred, and enter Wesley, being very British.
Oh my. Yeah, with his little tea, his little porcelain tea kettle. So cute.
And then the gay panic jumps out. He calls it funny stuff, Morgan. And Wesley is so confused. He is just baffled by what is happening in the scene.
Yeah, he does not get it. And why should he? I also would say it's very weird for, like, Mark Angel, who is, you know, experiencing quite a bit of gay panic, to turn their handshake into a hug. Like,
right, that...
You're sending mixed signals, bro.
Well, that's what Angel's doing, too. But yeah, a firm handshake, and then he turns it into a hug.
He is gives very Gunn excited. A tip.
He gives Gunn a tip.
Oh my god.
And Gunn keeps that tip because reparations.
Good for Gunn, honestly. Like, I was like, when I saw that, I was like, ugh. But when Gunn's like, fine, I'm taking this, I was like, hell yeah.
Mark Angel just munches on a breakfast burrito for the rest of the scene. Mm-hmm. And it is good acting.
After the way everybody treated Gunn in the last episode, you keep that money.
Keep the money.
I like ask to for more.
I like to think Angel bought him that gay boy color. Also reparations.
I hope so.
Yeah, Corey's like, why are you eating? He's like, because I'm hungry. Which, the thing I don't understand, actually, is Mark Angel not realizing, like, his taste buds are all fucked up?
Yeah, I wondered if that would matter to him. Like, that he doesn't seem to notice that, but I guess he just doesn't.
And then we get the line, escorts. Oh, you mean hookers.
Ugh.
I mean, yes, again, this episode was written by a man, but again, it's also 2001. But still, the lengths to which they go in this episode to discuss these characters, who, again, were just traumatized by flesh melting.
They were, like, doing their job and witnessed a horrible thing. They are the victims here.
Terrible. And Gunn and Wesley are being gross men who are like, I want to talk to the escorts. No, I do. Like, what do you think? They're going to fuck you? Are you paying them? Like, what?
Yeah, like, I hate that. The idea that, like, it's going to be a super fun gig talking to these, like, sex workers.
They're relaying their trauma to you. That's what's happening.
Yeah, do you want to talk to some very traumatized women who saw dudes melt? Like, given that he called, I believe, the same number all of these times, is there, like, a poor woman who saw two guys melt? Who just had, like, through the luck of the draw, went to two of these different things and saw two dudes just melt in front of her? And if so, can I buy her a pasta dinner? I feel so bad.
I feel awful.
Like, dudes be melting on the job.
And then Courtney's like, are there any men who aren't just dogs? To which Mark Angel, mouthful of burritos, says...
You know, a woman is more than a piece of meat. Sorry, that's just how I feel.
Suddenly, Mark Angel becomes a woke bae.
Wow, feminism. He really just teaching a whole clinic on it for all of us. Sorry, that's just how I feel.
A mouthful of breakfast burrito.
Oh my God, the just... horrible vibes pouring off of him. Like, I at this point, again, how is everyone not noticing something is wrong?
It's just every scene. So have you guys noticed something yet? No? Somehow?
You're not enjoying all the red flags I'm waving in the air?
Ainge Marcus is trying to escape, but then he gets cut off by his friend and their dumb grandchild. Angel holds a baby, kind of.
I did like him being charmed but confused by the baby. Like, he was like, obviously it's lovely to hold. Because I'm like, when's the last time Angel held a baby? Like, who's giving their baby to Angel? Like, I don't know why, but for some reason I got, like, very touched and emotional about this. Where I was just like, I wonder when it is the last time, like, Angel held a baby. That someone just, like, warmly, honestly trusted him with a baby.
The Boxer Rebellion?
Yeah.
When Darla gave him that baby to eat.
Yeah. Not a fond memory. Like, I just wonder, like, when the last time someone just easily was like, oh, hold this baby for me. Like, it just must have felt like a level of normal that, a level of, like, human that he doesn't feel often, like, ever. And I just kind of, like, the way he looks at the baby, I just found, like, very sweet. And I was like, ah. Like, I wondered if there was anything to Angel, like, there isn't a lot of, like, Angel's never going to get to be an old man, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's a vampire. He's never going to be able to experience, like, all of this stuff. And I guess I wanted to know more about how that felt to him and what it brought up for him emotionally. And that's definitely something I was sad the episode couldn't explore.
Yeah, I guess that's not as fun as what you're seeing Boreanaz do, but, like, it's definitely interesting to, like, because you're trying to unpack this stuff, but it's not Boreanaz playing it, which is also, I guess, probably why they wouldn't want to focus on it. It's like,
yeah,
it's one thing if Boreanaz is the one, you know, dealing with that, but, like, he obviously can't because of the body swap.
Yeah, but I mean, I do love crazy horn dog Mark Angel, so I guess that is that's fun. You gotta save time for
it. It's worth it. And Mark Angel is shredding all the evidence of Angel investigations while drinking a martini.
But I do also want to say, like, these are, like, newspaper printouts he's shredding, and I'm like, they can print those out again. Like, it's
You know, he's an old man who doesn't understand the technology. That tracks.
But he's so proud of himself, and he just, like, victoriously drinks his martini and laughs.
And, like, they know the information. They read it and followed up on it.
Idiot.
I really do actually love that. Like, this old man is just, like, very dumb. It's, like, not being dumb for, like, plot convenience. It's, like, he is, like we said, he was, like, a dumb fuckboy who aged out of it, and now he's trying to relive that. And that's just what he is.
He's like, I refuse to adapt and, like, act my age and maybe learn something and try to have a good life. I will instead steal young fuckboys' bodies and continue to live my youth over and over again. Terrible. Yeah.
He finally meets Fred, And he tells her, you know, she's a very beautiful woman. He has one line.
Stay away from her.
He tells her to get dressed up so he can take her out on a night on the town. This is not the talk that Cordelia wanted.
He feeds her the olive. And he calls her sweetheart. Look, in all fairness to Fred, if David Boreanaz of that era said those things to me, I would be very excited and I would go get ready for my night on the town.
Oh, yes. I am in agreement.
But just, it's awful to watch. Like, it really did, like, make a pit in my stomach. Because she, like, Amy Acker is a gift. And anyone listening to this podcast knows that. But she is just so sweet. And to watch her be misled like this and used just makes me feel, like, absolutely ill. It's so sad. Like, she right now is such a damsel. Like, and I just I want to keep her safe and I want to protect her.
It's pure stay away from her, get a job is what it is.
Yes, get a job, stay away from her.
Yeah, so she goes to go get gussied up, and then enter Lila, here to do a favor, and reminding Angel that business with Cordelia was just business, and she gives him all the forged documents, basically, because she's like, it's not about you, it's about Gavin. I think she's so smart. He makes her a martini, and tells her she's a very beautiful woman. It's really a numbers game.
She's just like, I'll take the drink, sure. I do kind of respect that. It's like, look, I'll listen to you say nice things about me and have this drink for sure.
I mean, but she's kind of on her toes because obviously that vision thing had her fucked up with Angel. And she doesn't want to, like, make that mistake again of getting too comfortable with him and then him, you know, hurting her. And that's exactly what happens here. Even worse this time. So Fred realizes eventually it's not Angel at the end of this episode. Mm-hmm. Lila has no such realization by the end of this episode.
Nope.
She believes what happened was Angel 100%.
Yeah, she believes that they, like, made out on a desk, which, I mean, good for her. Like to have a sexy, hot enemy that you, like, make out with and then, like, run away from and scheme against. Like, she's living her best life.
I can't wait till Michael Chasen hears this.
Like, I mean,
he's like,
look,
what the fuck, Morgan?
Yeah, my sexy enemy playing video games outside. For the people listening who don't know me, I do like my boyfriend. I'm not shitting on him. He's my best friend. Aww. But yeah, Lila, you go, girl. Like, she's evil. She's not one to aspire to, but, like, good for her that she has a sexy archenemy.
And with this, at least, unlike everyone else, basically, and, like, Fred and Lila, I can understand why they are not questioning what Angel's behavior is here. Like, everyone else is, like, should be taken to task.
Yeah, I mean, because everyone's, like, hearing what they want to hear, and that's, like, to a certain extent kind of, like, intoxicating, and you can ignore stuff when you're like, oh, well, maybe he just likes me, and, like, finally, like, it's happening. Like, it does feel like kind of the vibe for the two of them. But Cordelia, come on. Come on.
Exactly. And then back at the retirement home, Ainge Marcus is trying to escape again, pulls the fire alarm. But then mortality catches up to him, and he has a heart attack. Angel would never have to deal with that. And again, this is interesting stuff that we don't flesh out too much because we got to get back to Angel and Lila about to fuck.
Mm-hmm. Which, to be fair, I wanted to get back to, so.
It is aggressive what is happening.
It is, but on the other hand, they are two very beautiful people. And
oh, no, I'm not saying it's aggressive in a bad way. It's just, it is just objectively aggressive.
It really is.
Any listeners who did not, like, rewatch the episode, like, in advance, like, just watch this scene because the positioning and the force that Stephanie Romanoff and David Boreanaz are using in this scene.
They are going at it. And also, like, to be in Lila's shoes, you're at your enemy's office. He's plying you with martinis and then is like, don't tell me you never thought about it. Like, she must be high-fiving a million angels. She must be so excited.
Again, can't blame her. The poor Fred walks in because she's ready to go out on the town with Angel, and she sees this. She's so defeated.
This breaks my heart. Her little dress with her hair down. Like, she really did get fancy for this. And this, how dare he?
This bastard. Dude, you, like, just told her to go up. Like, what did you think? He doesn't think he's dumb.
Shut the door. Like, haven't you seen an episode of Three's Company? I haven't, but I assume it's like this, right?
Not so much, but it's like an episode of Happy Endings where they do a Three's Company.
Yes.
So Fred goes away. She's very sad. And then Angel, you know, being Angel, but, you know, Marcus, he does a little chomp.
A little bit of a chomp, yeah.
And Lila pushes him off. He's biting her.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? And she pulls out her, like, her cross, because of course she has a cross, because she knows sure. Vampire. And yeah. He asks, whoa, what, are you born again all of a sudden? Because he has no idea what's going on.
To be fair, but I will say, like, this guy knows about magic, but not about vampires? Like,
he's so dumb. She says he'll never get this close to her again. Ouch. And then he feels his bumpy face. He's like, well, that's weird. And then he accidentally pricks his thumb. And he's just sucking on it on the way to the bathroom. And then he sees no reflection. And he's like, oh, okay.
Absolutely wonderful. Like, Boreanaz is so funny in this scene. Like, just the playing dumb is so fun for him. You can tell.
The thumb sucking
is brilliant.
And then over at the retirement home, Ainge Marcus, he's woken up for his fourth heart attack. And it's like, one more. It's not going to end well.
Yeah.
Cordelia comes in with her great joke that's going to kill. And there's no one to hear. And I'm just like, I'm so happy they didn't write the scene with her and the escorts. Because...
God.
What the fuck would that be? Like, I can't imagine them... She calls, like, said the pretty skanky woman thing. Like, what... How would they have been acting after what they witnessed?
Yeah, they must have been, like, very, very upset and fucked up. And Cordelia, come on, don't judge. Let's just be sex positive and, like, all be nice.
Yeah. So no one is in the hotel, but then she finds a sobbing Fred in the elevator.
Her hiding in the elevator is so sad, but also cute of her.
It's her own little cave. And she's like, I should have knocked. I mean, the door was open.
Yeah. And she makes this comment about how she's like, I didn't have a door for so long, so I forget to knock all the time. Like... Fred, just breaking my heart here and, like, saying, like, he called me sweetheart, but that's not real. It's like when a waitress calls you honey. It doesn't mean you're special or anything. It's just a word, right?
I wrote my notes, Jesus, he broke her.
End my life. I can't look at this sweet, sweet girl be sad anymore. Like, Amy Acker, an angel, a queen.
Amy Acker, come on the pod.
Come on the pod.
That's how we make these things so, right?
Yes. If you just speak it into existence, it will happen. I'm a firm believer in The Secret, I guess.
Oh, great. That's your new thing now?
Yeah, I'm into The Secret now, as of this second.
So Cordy thinks that they had the talk, and she's all like, you know, I knew who's going to fuck it up pretty much. And it's like, I told him to say it. And she's like, you told him to make out with that woman on the desk?
Cordelia is like, what?
And then we go to the club. It is 2001. The Chemical Brothers are a galaxy bouncing all up in this club.
Oh, my.
Bum, bum, ba, ba. Ah. Bum, bum, ba, ba. That's Galaxy Bounce by Chemical Brothers, just so you know.
And a perfect rendition.
I literally just wrote in my notes, LOL, Boreon is bopping.
He is. He's bopping. He is having a great time. His shirt is open so deep. And is there embroidery on it? It seemed like there was. And I was like, Angel owns this shirt? And I was confused.
Was there? I don't know. I was distracted by the leather pants again.
So fair. But there is some texture on like the top of that shirt up until where it is buttoned. And I was like, I don't believe Angel owns a shirt that busy. Like it truly
is. He went shopping.
I think this guy hit up Express because that feels very, this is an Express jewel-toned button-down. Mm-hmm. That's how this happened.
And then he eyes this this woman who has a boyfriend, and the boyfriend walks away. And like the vibe I get is like club owner boyfriend who's like very like dangerous.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I get from that like that fight, right? That's what you get?
Yeah, because he has like a bunch of boys with him. Like yeah. He has a whole crew. That feels like that, yes.
So he went to the club with his girlfriend, and then he is telling her she's a very beautiful woman, I'm guessing. we don't hear what he says this time, but there is some hand on thigh action, and it's working this time.
There is. And look, maybe it's loud and she can barely hear him, and it's a lot of the face doing the work.
I think because now he knows he's a vampire, because he uses like some of it, like Angel's zooping ability. I think he's just using the I'm a creature of the night thing now, using the mystique instead of being his corny ass self. So I think that's what actually worked.
Probably, yeah.
So they go outside, just making out. She's like, I hope my boyfriend catches us. That'd be hot.
Wow. Good for her. Look, she knows what she wants.
So they kiss, and then he does the chomp, and the boyfriend and his goons come out. It's like, don't do that.
Yeah, please stop biting my girlfriend.
Don't make out with her either, but don't bite her.
Definitely don't bite her.
Mark Angel kicks their asses because, you know, vampire
strength.
They're like, what are you on? What drugs? Well, obviously he's a gang member on PCP. That's what the B-word show taught us. And he jumps down and goes, woohoo! And he's a Power Ranger or something.
It's so un-Angel. It's so goofy.
And speaking of goofy, I think now's as good a time as any to do a fuck watch.
Fuck watch.
So, Morgan, you're the guest. I think you should choose your fuck watch pick first.
As I may have mentioned, or it might be apparent, this episode did not get me very horny because it's too horny. But gun to my head, I would say Lila. She's having sexy makeouts with her sexy makeout enemy. I'm in.
Cool. So Lila's a good choice, I will say.
Look, she's a career woman. She knows what she wants. She gets what she wants.
Correct. So I'm going to break the show by saying, honestly, as horny as this episode is, I can't in good conscience fuck anyone.
So valid.
I feel like wrong. I feel like there are a lot of consent problems with anyone I want to fuck in this episode, honestly. So, sorry, Morgan. I'm going to make you look bad by saying no one, because I care about consent.
Can I, instead of fucking Lila, can I take Fred out to, like, a nice dinner and, like, give her a huge bowl of pasta?
Yes.
How
many pasta dinners do you want to take characters in this episode out to?
I name a character and I would take everyone out to a pasta dinner. They're all so sweet. They probably aren't eating well because they're not making any money. Alfredo sauce for everybody. You know, whatever anyone needs.
Some homemade mozzarella.
Yeah. If you think I won't take Wesley out for some tortellini, you don't know me.
Fuck watch.
Fuckwatch.
Ainge Marcus is his friend, who unfortunately is not given a name. This is a black guest actor, not given a name, credited as, let me just double check right here. So on IMDb, it's like other resident. Here in the Buffy wiki, it does say Jackson is the character's name. So we'll say Jackson.
Oh, okay, Jackson.
Played by an actor named Paul Benjamin, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I don't think they like actually say it.
And I did not hear it. He has nice energy, though. He seems like a sweetheart.
He does. He's like, he's worried about, you know, Marcus having another heart attack. I don't understand how Marcus has made a friend at all in this home, because Marcus is, as we know, a piece of shit. And I can't believe he has anything good to say about any black person ever.
Yeah, he doesn't have great vibes.
Does he think Jackson is one of the good ones? Is that what's happening here?
That might be his vibe. Yeah. Ugh.
Wesley is like, I don't believe it, on my desk. And then Gunn, who, which shows again that old gang of mine was such an anomaly. Gunn is so amused by this. He's like, it did used to be his. He was just kind of reclaiming it. Again, Gunn is like, he thinks it's hilarious.
Gunn is having a good time and he deserves it.
He does. Reparations.
Yeah.
Courtney thinks this is just like Angel, you know, until she realized that was a brunette he was making out with and not a blonde. And that's when she's like, oh, something's wrong.
I loved that joke so much.
It's 'cause she's right in that case, usually. Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's the thing. Mm-hmm. This is where she's like, okay, he's Angelus, right? Mm-hmm. But you guys are all smarter than this, because, like, why would Angelus just, like, poorly...
Yeah.
Hang out with you guys undercover. He would just like, he would have killed Wesley in that one-on-one scene if it was Angelus.
Yeah, 100%. And wouldn't Angelus have like memories of everything that's happened? Like he'd know how to act. Like Angelus can suitably pretend to be Angel if he needs to.
Angelus is smart, which is crazy because Liam was a himbo.
Look, he had a lot of time to get smart.
And then Fred asks who's Angelus, and then Gunn explains because, you know, last season he was the one who had to ask all the time, and mm-hmm. they had to explain. So now Gunn can explain.
Gunn is like, I mean, not a nice dude, but cooler than Angel for sure.
If you find Angel hot, Fred, you're going to find Angelus really hot.
So we got to keep you away from him.
Even though Angelus is not in this episode, I feel like the buy for Boreanaz jingle should go here just because of Gunn being like, but like, Angelus is really hot though.
He's got a booty stare and hot spiky hair. If you're straight or gay, your tingly feelings don't care. You're just being honest about this sexy demonic in your buy for Boreanaz. Buy for Boreanaz.
And this is when Wes is like, no, it's not Angelus, dummies. It's clearly, like, he was reading up on vampires because he's so stupid.
That, like, it's open. There are a bunch of books open to the vampire page.
Normalize senior citizens being dumb like the rest of us. This episode's actually great. I mean.
It's actually very progressive because it's reminding us, like, stop, like, assuming that all old people are wise. Some of them are real idiots.
There are tons of idiots in the Greatest Generation, so you gotta acknowledge that. Kristen, cut whatever you need to cut from this bit.
Kristen, cut everything I've said. Nice to meet you.
And since we keep acknowledging Kristen, we might as well do Kristen's corner here too.
Kristen's corner. Kristen's corner. It's all right. What the fuck? If Courtney is hot, Kristen's corner is the place for very deep thoughts.
Oh, hey everyone, it's me, Kristen. I swear, I truly swear that Kristen's corner is not going to turn in to the Lila Morgan show, although maybe you'd be into that. But here's the deal. Lila makes out with Angel on a desk. I know it's not really Angel, but it's hot and I like it. And I'm not here to deny that fact. I thought it would be really fun to give us all a martini recipe so that we can all be our scandalous selves together in celebration of Lila's make out with the enemy on a desk session. And I realized during my research that the martini is the horniest drink ever. I found recipes for the classic dirty martini. Sure, expected that. Then I found a recipe for a wet martini, which is sweeter. Then I found a recipe for a naked martini, which is made with no vermouth. I mean, can they get any hornier? They're naked. They're dirty. They're wet. It gets a little less horny when you put them all together like that. Anyway, I am going to give us a dirty martini recipe, and I have one for sober folks too, so that we can all be nice and dirty together in this perhaps horniest episode of Angel on Top to ever exist. You're going to take 2.5 ounces of gin or vodka. You're going to take 1/2 ounce of dry vermouth. You're going to take 1/2 ounce of olive brine. And here's the deal. The garnish says 2 to 4 olives, but this is Lila fucking Morgan. We're going to go with 6. Now you're going to take the sexiest rocks glass you can find. You're going to get your shaker. And if you don't have one, you can use a Tupperware. I won't tell anyone. You're going to put some ice in that shaker. You're going to pour all of those ingredients, minus those 6 olives, into the shaker. And you're going to shake that shit like you mean it. Now, do me a favor. Throw a few cubes in that rocks glass. Strain your martini over that ice. And throw those olives in. And listen, if you're sober, you can still get all the dirt that you need. Take some sparkling water, put it over ice, add a splash of that olive brine, and please include those 6 olives. And if you're listening, Jenny, you can take those olives. You can put them in your 1080p pipe. And you can smoke them in HD. Hey, back to the show.
Kristen's Corner. Kristen's Corner. It's all Riley Dotson. What the fuck? It 40 is hot. Kristen's Corner is the place for very deep thoughts.
Angel Marcus is like trying to hide and get the drop on Mark Angel. And, you know, he does well, except for, you know, he's in Marcus's body, so doesn't have the reflexes of, you know, Angel's body. Then we get Mark Angel saying, vampires don't help people, you moron. You kill him.
As far as I can tell, you are the world's worst vampire. Vampires don't help people, you moron. They kill them. Here, let me show you.
You may have the attitude, and you may have the power, but there's one thing you don't have, and never will. Friends. 4 of them standing behind you with big heavy things.
And they do, and they have big heavy things. And Cordelia and Fred just beat the shit out of this guy.
It's so gratifying to watch all of them hitting him.
It's so good.
What he deserves.
Beating down the patriarchy.
Goodbye. Good riddance.
And I love the beat. Once they switch back bodies, like Borgana says, like Angel's still in pain from the beating they just gave him. he's like, oh shit, I gotta deal with this.
I wrote Angel's after school special ass zingers. Your heart's weak because you don't use it. He's like, a lot of rage. That isn't healthy. Like, you stop, you old man. These are bad. You have to know that. These are not cool things to say.
But you know what? He's right.
They're accurate things. They're just not cool.
And so they're walking off. And poor Marcus has another heart attack. And you know what they were saying about one more heart attack?
Yeah, yikes.
And Ryan's all, what's going on? To which Angel says, Dad's having a bad night, as they walk out all cool like.
And I'm like, is that man just dying?
It's so bleak.
Is a man dying as you guys walk away, like, stylistically?
And that's like, we're going to put this in the opening credits to show how cool they are. Like, a man is dying.
Just walking away from an old man's heart giving out. These are our heroes.
It's a strange message to send, I gotta say.
It is odd.
And you know what? Maybe we could get a better message if Angel watched a certain episode of television from a certain WB series.
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They get that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see. Oh, yeah.
Angel would like the W.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest to Angel an episode he technically should know very well, but doesn't. Mm-hmm. And that would be, and you know what? I'm ending the bit now. I'm ending the bit. That would be Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
ooh,
episode 3, season 1, Witch. So Angel wasn't actually around during this episode, mm-hmm, because, you know, he was preparing, like, what he was going to say to Buffy next time he saw her in Teacher's Pet. So he was, yeah, like, what am I going to do? Oh, I'm going to give her my jacket. That's what, yeah, I'm going to do. And that's actually a cool move. So he wasn't around to see the Amy and her mom body swap situation. And, you know, mm-hmm, why someone would do something like this to someone they love, you know, let alone, you know, a random private investigator.
Right.
But, you know, maybe he could understand Marcus more if he watched this episode of Buffy. Or, yeah, you know, even talk to Buffy on, like, when they would see each other and be like, so how was your week last week? And, well, there was this whole body swap thing, and then I was singing Macho Man for some reason. And then, like, there was a cheerleader, like, her hands went on fire. Like, this is why, as much as I love the Angel-Buffy relationship in, like, the first three seasons of Buffy, like, mm-hmm, they never had, like, real couples conversations, you know?
No, it's a very, like, adolescent love, which makes sense for Buffy and maybe a little less for Angel. Because it, like, what did they talk about? Like, and this is said by a person who wants nothing more than for them to be together forever and always. Like, I'm like, you guys need to try it again and communicate.
But yeah, this could be a good starting point, just talking about the events of the episode Witch. Mm-hmm. And maybe Angel would know how to deal with a body swap situation like this if he did that.
Yeah. Come on, buddy.
Because this isn't the same as, like, the Buffy Faith body swap. This is, like, specifically the witch body swap happening here.
It is, because it's a very, like, youth is wasted on the young, vampirism is wasted on the boring, I guess.
So, yeah, Angel, maybe watch the show you came from once or twice or something, or just have a conversation with Buffy, which, you know, you can do soon.
Yep. Oh, gosh. Maybe that's the first thing they talk about.
So, never mind. I guess I didn't have to tell him to do it because he does it anyway. Angel finally comes to talk to Fred. But she's already had the talk with Cordelia because, again, Cordelia knew he would fuck it up. So she just did it.
I can't. It's so cute. Thank you, Cordelia. You had a couple rough spots with the way you talked about those sex workers, but you came through in the end, and I love you, babe.
And then Fred says something that's, like, really hit me hard because I'm a sad person, as we all know. Mm-hmm. She says, it's like something out of Fitzgerald, the man who can have everything but love. Well, maybe in some ways you're better off, because love is, well, in a way it's everything, but it's also heartache and disappointment, and those are good things to avoid.
Ah! This is where I have baby written with, like, five Y's. Ugh, girl.
And then Cordelia comes out to tell him Willow's on the line and Buffy's alive.
Yay!
Huzzah!
I didn't realize it would be in this episode, so when it happened, I genuinely, like, gasped and was like, ah! Like, I was so happy. I love Buffy. I'm so happy she's alive.
She's so happy she's alive. I'm, mm-hmm, happy she's alive. The bit is dead. Sorry to anyone who didn't like the bit, but it's over now, so.
R.I.P. to the bit, but unlike the bit, Buffy is alive and I love her.
Then Fred's just like, Buffy? I mean, she doesn't say it with that much disgust, but, like, you know she's feeling it.
Oh, God.
We did it. We made it through.
We absolutely crushed it, in my opinion.
Morgan, You got any plugs?
You can find me on Twitter at Lorgan Mudich. You can listen to the podcast I am on with LaToya and our friend Jill. It's called The Vampire Diaries. We cover The Vampire Diaries, and it's super fun.
And of course, you can find me on Twitter at LaFergs. I don't have an Instagram because I'm an old woman. and you can find this podcast on Twitter, Instagram at AngelOnTopCast. Email us at AngelOnTopPodcast@gmail.com. You can go to angelontop.com, do all that fun stuff, talk to me, dance with me, as Hot Hot Heat said. and until next time, good night, Scoobies. Good night, Morgan.
Night.
Nowadays, trends and news cycles change faster than we can blink. But there are some things that withstand the test of time. And if you're looking for a connection to something timeless, and maybe also a glimpse of life at a slower pace, I believe everyone can relate to the very human experiences explored in Jane Austen's novels. And that's where I come in. My name is Alison Larkin. I'm a writer, comedian, and narrator and host of The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin. I spent a lot of my childhood in the part of England where Jane Austen lived and wrote, and now that I live in the States, nothing gives me a sense of homecoming quite like narrating her books. On this show, you'll listen to award-winning narration. I'll give myself a pat on the back for that, as well as conversations with actors, writers, and other fascinating people who all share a passionate love for Jane Austen. So please, join me as we embark on a wonderful journey through Jane Austen's work. Be sure to listen and subscribe to The Jane Austen Podcast with Alison Larkin, wherever you get your podcasts.